Hey, Dan.
Happy birthday, Rob.
That's crap. Okay, so for the listening audience, we were just setting this up, and I thought Dan was going to give me a surprise birthday party. He said, "When's your birthday?" And then he opens with that. So it was excellent. That was excellent tactics.
So when is your birthday, buddy?
May 13th.
May 13th.
Right, May 13th, 2002.
Yeah. Well, good. So, happy Art of the Possible. This is going to be a special episode. We always say we have a special guest, but I mean, today we have a really special guest.
So I hear.
So you hear. And so, you know, we know it's Mother's Day coming up. And actually I think we're, you know, we will air this probably, the week of Mother's Day, probably not on Mother's Day, 'cause that's a horrible day to launch a podcast on a Sunday. But this is actually the Momcast. So we have, and Rob, I know your mother was a wonderful woman and a big piece of your life, and someone that was really like critical in your upbringing. And she, I hate to say it, did a wonderful job. So I want to honor your mom.
Awesome. And I see bits of her every week coming out of me. The pieces that I was like, oh, I'm never going to do that. And I do it. And things that is like, I need to do that over again. And I do them over again.
Oh, good. It's all the wonderful pieces, I'm sure. So, and so today we actually have my mom as the guest. So I want to say welcome to Kathleen Singletary, or Kate. Mom, thank you for joining Art of the Possible.
Well, thank you for having me, Dan and Rob.
So I'm going to try literally not to like start like kind of, I'm a very easy crier. So I'm going to try not to get all like sentimental on this, but you know,
Go ahead.
Well, that helps. I appreciate it. So, you know, mom, you taught me the art of the possible. I think both, you know, mostly by observation and watching you kind of go through your life and how you lived it and what you did, in so many ways, both in your, kind of, I'd say your personal life, your professional life, and your, you know, your civic life. And then, you know, like tactically showing me the art of the possible. And, so thank you for that. And the,
well,
my
favorite, I hope it's not over yet. Making it
yeah,
sound like I'm done.
Exactly. Exactly. Let's not eulogize. We're celebrating. Yeah, we're moms.
Thank you, Rob.
Good night.
Did I use the present tense? I didn't use the past tense.
You're starting to sound very past tensey.
So one of my favorite stories, and we'll actually post this link. I shared it with Rob the other day. Was I was sitting around, you know, probably watching, you know, bad reruns on TV before there was cable at home one evening in high school, and I think I was probably a sophomore. And my mom calls up and she goes, "Hey, what are you doing?" And I'm like, "Nothing." And she goes, "Come to the field house. Come to the field house at Lyons Township High School in LaGrange, Illinois on Brainerd Avenue. And just come." And I go, "Well, why?" She goes, "Just come. Just come." And she hangs up. And so I kind of like didn't even give me a chance to say no. She's kind of hung up and I was curious enough. So I hopped in the car and came to the field house and came around back to where she told me to go. And there's this big van there and there's all these wires, and all of a sudden, like, she just sticks a microphone in my hand and she goes, "The person that announces the basketball games for Lyons Township High School got sick tonight and I need you to announce the game." And it was awesome. And I think it was like, so Rob, my mom ran the radio TV program at Lyons Township High School. We had our own radio station. We had our own TV station. And I think there was probably Mr. Weesmus's kind of TV production that night. And so I think you were probably helping him out, but it was awesome. Like, I had never done it before, and only a mom could be like, "I think Dan can do that." And I ended up doing all the basketball games, you know, sophomore, junior, senior year of my career. And then partnering with Ray Murphy, who actually at one time was my Little League baseball coach, to announce the football games as well. And it was awesome. It was so much fun.
Was that where that video came from that you shared the other day?
Yeah. So we'll pop a video up into the our LinkedIn feed and maybe Facebook to show a 1993 Lions Township basketball game that I announced with Jerry Marks. And they were so gracious at Lions Township High School that we had to share a microphone. And that was not your favorite part, right?
Well, you buried the lead, Daniel. You had hair.
Yes. See, Rob, this is why you're going to like my mom, right? I'm going to get it from both sides.
Absolutely. Here. Absolutely. We're going to get along famously.
So that was just a wonderful example of kind of, you know, art of the possible being, you know, forced upon you as a 17-year-old kid. But
I really like the ambush tactic. I mean, that was because you probably would have thought yourself to death.
No, it's funny because mom, talk a little bit about, so in high school, you're the theater, you ran the theater program, right?
Yes, I did. It was wonderful. It wasn't work. It was just wonderful play. So you remember when you get to play all the time, you can think of all these wonderful possibilities.
I love it.
So I was very, very, very fortunate to be involved in the arts while I was actually also trying to be an English teacher. But it was it was a chance to experiment and take everybody forward, including myself.
And that was the point. Like, you know, so you did all these really cool things. You did radio and TV, and you were teaching, you know, doing the theater program. You were the debate coach. All these wonderful things that honestly, like secretly, I'm like, oh man, that's so cool. And that's awesome. But I was a classic teenage boy. I'm like, oh, I need to be an athlete and I need to, you know, play baseball and I need to be cool. And I never would have done radio and TV without that. Like, Rob, you're right. Like, it was like the ambush style was really, really fitting. So, but I want to get to you, Mom, because this is all about
Hold
you.
Hold on. I have one more thing to say about that in terms of possibilities and the way people get involved with things. What if you hadn't been a baseball fanatic? What would I have missed with all those wonderful, but all the wonderful people I met, the parents, the coaches, the boys.
The Arvanites, the Robinsons, exactly the Sullivans, right. The Engels.
Those were very important people in my life. And I would not have met them unless you gave me the possibility of getting involved with all that because of your talents.
We're not going to mention that you missed the greatest baseball game I ever played. And
we're not going to mention. We're going to try to avoid that.
That's okay.
But
she probably missed one game my entire life, and she literally missed this All-Star game where I like finally got over like all my injuries and had an amazing game. And the guy that was actually the umpire for the game was like they put these. I can't remember. They're advanced scouts, which basically doesn't mean they're like advanced. It means like they're way out in the field looking for talent. And so he came up to me after the game and is like, "Hey, where are you playing baseball in college?" And I just said, "Oh, I'm going to Notre Dame," leaving out the point that I wasn't playing baseball or couldn't even come close to touching the field at Notre Dame. He said, "Oh, we'll come out there and see you watch." And Mom wasn't at that game. But anyway, we digress. Mom, what I'd love for you to do, and the reason why I wanted you on, it wasn't just to, you know, gush over you and to tell these fun stories about our, my childhood. It was because I truly believe you did live a life of the art of the possible because you did so many fascinating things. And I'd love you to almost like paint the picture of, you know, Kate Singletary as a, you know, coming out of college, coming out of Michigan State, in becoming a teacher and all the way to, I don't want to ruin the story. So tell a little bit of the story about how you went through it. You don't have to go blow by blow here, but like,
please, how boring can you get?
Right.
Sincerely, thank you very much. But you know, Dan, you give me, and I think a lot of people that you admire, Rob, I don't know you as well, but I think the people that you tend to think have these extraordinary or unusual lives are really just winging it. And I don't mean that by just I think the obvious connotation of that. I mean that if you are trying to live the art of the possible, sometimes you got to retool that into, you think sometimes it's the art of the impossible, because of the fact that you feel that you have to, for some reason, whether it's financial or whether it's family oriented or whether it's professionally oriented, you feel like you have to get to some place or try something different. It's not necessarily because you have planned out that these are the most wonderful things that you could try in your life, and then they go ahead and happen to you. I just think you work yourself into the opportunity and then take it.
But that last part's the key. How many people do you see on the train? Like, I would commute now and again to DC, and I would recognize faces at the train station. And I'm there 3 times a month. They're there every morning and every evening, and they're not taking advantage of the art of the possible. Anything is possible to all those people, and they don't take advantage of it. And so I totally agree. No one plans these things, but the willingness to say, I'm going to try that, the willingness to go to the field house and pick up the mic, like, that's so key, right?
Absolutely. I certainly agree with that. Why not? What is there to lose? What is there to fear? Is that something that you're born with? I don't know. I think probably in my case it was, because I had a very unusual father, which unfortunately Danny never knew, but he was the epitome of the art of the possible. He had a reason because he was in very poor health from the day he was born. And I think he knew that he didn't have a whole bunch of time in life, so he better try as many things as he could before he kicked out. And that happened to be true in his life. But what he taught his kids was the fact that we didn't need to be afraid to go out and give it a go. So I never had that problem in terms of being fearful of trying something. Sometimes I feel that I probably should have been more cautious. Some of the things that I've tried to do.
Okay. Well, good. This is interesting. This is fascinating. So, you and I have also talked about doing just recording some great conversations about, your life, but, I want to hear that. Just for the listeners to set the stage for like who you are. So you were, professionally a, high school educator, like a high school teacher that taught English, was kind of your core subject, and then you had radio and TV arts and all these other things along with it. And then you got involved in the faculty, like you were president of the faculty and other kind of various positions there. And then all of a sudden at age 50, you come home, and I think I must have been either like in college or like just right out of college, but I remember being at the house.
Ready to go to college.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's right. And so then you're like, oh yeah, I'm going to go get my law degree. I just got accepted into Loyola University to get my law degree. I'm like, what? How did that happen? Like what was going on in your head? Like that was, for me as a child, we're like, she's crazy.
Well, you have lots of things in your, don't you all have, all your listeners, you too, don't you have lots of things in your head about what you might want to do with your life? And you might have had those dreams for a long time. Basically, I never really knew what I wanted to do when I grew up. So I thought maybe I could just give it all a go. And so I'd always thought about becoming an attorney. I just, life didn't work out for me to do that when I was a young person.
Marrying an attorney,
you came along.
Yeah, and marrying an attorney didn't fill that hole for you at the beginning. So.
Marrying an attorney did not fill that hole for me. No, and so you know, when I felt that you were well, you and your sister were well on the path, and I still, and I had been so involved, started to be involved in politics and civic life and those kinds of activities, lots of negotiation work in terms of my profession, that I decided it was time to go get the degree. So, you know, when you consider the art of the possible, you know, things become more and more possible if you kind of are taking little inroads into professions or ideas. So that just sort of naturally happened, and I happened to have a family that was supportive of it, and so I just went ahead and gave it a try.
And were you interested in learning about law, or were you interested in the JD so you could do something with it?
I was. That's an excellent question. I think basically I had started out life with an interest in the law. But once I started to be heavily involved in labor negotiations, it became another step ahead in that area, because now I'm a certified mediator and work with labor and employment issues. So that was a natural outgrowth. So
you got,
just sort of happened.
You got twofer. You wanted to learn it, and then you got to use it.
Yeah, that's I think that's what people need to do. They need to know that everybody is multi-talented. I truly believe that. And they would be so thrilled with themselves if they went out and realized that it's not too much of a jump to go to something that is related to maybe what they're doing, not quite the same, but related, and then it's kind of easier to get there than you thought that it might be.
What did your dad model that made you not afraid to take chances? Like you said, he showed his kids that it was okay. Like, what does that look like in your eyes?
In my eyes, it looks like the fact that he was able to he was a businessman, so because he had to work to support his family. But what he really wanted to be was, he was involved in the same kind of things that I'm involved with. He was a professional DJ and a professional actor, and besides entertaining the neighborhood with his shenanigans. So he just had a lot of character traits that showed you that he acted on the possibilities of his life. And I'm going to emphasize, they had to act on them quickly, because I don't think he felt that he was going to have a lot of them left. He had an urgency about him.
And Grandpa Howard was a character, right?
Well, he was.
Yeah. And so I think, I could totally see him as from the stories of like being a character and then just almost, just doing it, like not thinking and just kind of doing it, which is kind of funny, because Grandpa Tom on the other side was kind of the same way. Right. And so, so Rob's now learning like a lot of reasons, like why I'm the way I am right now. But
yeah.
So Mom, one thought I did have though, is like, I think we all come from the three people on this phone call right now are sitting in pretty wonderful lives, and we've had a lot of opportunities. We had great parents, born in some pretty good zip codes, things like that. I probably had some, maybe more and better opportunities than many.
Yes, you did.
But I also know that, you are the main breadwinner in our family, right? As a educator, right? Which is not, known for its financial, largesse, right? And so there probably were times when you were going through that where you either did take the risk and were like, I'm going to do this, and wow, I'm not exactly sure how it's going to come out. Or were there times, as you mentioned, when Heather and I were maybe young and growing up where you didn't pull the trigger on it because you're like, you know what, this is not the time and we can't do this. When did you hold back? Like,
well, yeah, you have to understand that I really behaved, whether you believe it or not, I tended to behave myself when you were small. Okay. And I will definitely, and I'm definitely going to plug in. I want you to have a conversation because I have to plug in because my battery is going low.
Well, and I will interject here. You said you behaved yourself, but I do remember as a small child going to the Dylan's house with a lot of Crown Royal and cigarettes and Jeopardy. I just remember Crown Royal because
I've never drunk Crown Royal in my life.
But I remember one time I came away with a purple bag that I used to keep all my coins in. I think it was a Crown Royal bag. But whatever you got, you guys would have a lot of fun. Oh, she just dropped out. This is the first time we've had this happen, Rob.
I know. What are we going to do? We'll clip this out.
No, we're not going to clip this out.
We're not going to clip this out.
I'm going to ask you a question.
Okay. That
I will not ask her. I want to ask her the question. So, Mom, who was a labor lawyer for the NEA, how do you feel about Ronald Reagan's approach to the unions in the 80s? Should I ask her that question?
Absolutely.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What are your reflections like as you listen to these stories, like around the woman who kind of made me who I was? And my mom's my hero. Like, I mean, she is. I should say this while she's on, and I will say it to her. Like, she is my hero.
No,
for a lot of reasons.
No, I get it. You know, the thing that's banging around in my head is your granddad had urgency. And I think that like whether you have a statistically short life or the same painfully short life of a full life expectancy, like the urgency to want to pig out on life, man, that's just so key, right?
I love that term, man. And it's a pig out on life. And just the stories I've heard about my grandfather, who I think he died shortly before I was born, is, you know, pigging out on life is awesome. Now, the question I have is Kate Singletary comes back online here is, so Mom, Rob just had no worries. Rob just had a phenomenal term. Go ahead, Rob, say what you just said.
I was just sharing with Dan. I was reflecting on your choice of word that your dad had urgency about enjoying life. And I think that whether it's a curtailed life because of health or just like the fact that we're here for just a blink of time to pig out on life. Is like the MO, right? This is an all you can eat. Some people are skinny and some people get fat, and I want to be fat on it.
Yeah.
That's excellent, Rob. Excellent. Wow.
So the other thing about my mom is that she's a Shakespeare, lover and expert. And so, you know, that feel a little Shakespearean. I was talking to Aiden, my, 14-year-old today, and he's reading Hamlet, Mom.
Oh,
yeah. And so his first time with it. And then Evan actually read Romeo and Juliet, and we were going through, and I looked up online and I started reading idioms and phrases that came from Shakespeare. They couldn't believe all the things that they use and say in an everyday life. And Rob, we're going to add pigging out on life to that list. Here's the question on that, though. As we talk about the art of the possible and kind of the urgency and the pigging out, the thing I worry about, honestly, is I think about Grandpa Howard and, you know, even Grandpa Tom. And what about the persistence and the stick-with-it-ness and the staying-with-it-ness is always my – as I reflect on my life, I'm like, man, did I stick with it long enough? Did I do it long enough? And I think that's the – art of the possible question too, especially kind of directly relating to startups of like, God, is it time or are we just in the valley of death and we got to keep on, you know, keep on keeping on and pushing on. And Rob, this gets personal between you and me, right? You know, kind of around reached and where I made a decision that I think you rightfully believe might have been a little premature, and for both real and emotional reasons. And that's something that, you know, haunts me every day of like, man. So what's your mom, what's your take on that?
I believe in completeness till the death.
Well, that seems really a little wishy-washy, Kate. I don't know.
And mom,
you
I don't know.
You know that about me. I don't care if I have, and you know that I might have five projects on at the same time, but I am going to see them through until they are done.
Says the woman that ran a bed and breakfast in Cape Cod that almost put her in the grave.
That was a fantastic experience. It was something that I had never even contemplated doing until my husband talked me into it. And I'm glad he did. I never had done anything like that. It was fabulous. Actually, what I didn't realize was it was just like a different kind of theater. Mm. Right. It just, you know, I was doing all the theater stuff, playing with the guests and having a good time. And he was doing all the cooking and the cleaning. And so it was just fabulous. And that was a possibility that I never even saw, that when I started having, after we started it, I had an inkling of what I might have missed if I had said no.
Yeah.
So that's kind of another thing about my personality, is I'm afraid to say no because I'm afraid that I might miss something.
Yeah, FOMO, which you passed on to your son. Yeah, the fear of missing out on stuff. Rob, what's your take on that, the stick-to-itiveness, and when do you kind of stick with it and when do you cut bait and move on?
You know, I think it depends on who's mortgaged in the deal, right? If I've got a family and I've got literally a mortgage and cars and college, I got to choke up in the bat. If it was just me and I'm willing to like live in a trailer and eat ramen, then I'm sort of with your mom. Like, let's do it until the death.
I think it's pronounced ramen.
Ramen? What'd I say? Ramen? Ramen? Tomato? Tomato? we're going to go grammar before we hang up. Don't worry.
Uh-oh. Yeah. Yeah. That's not going to be good for me.
No, not.
And so for the listeners, like, if let's just kind of recap again, as we think about, you know, the art of the possible in my mom's career, in the sense of, you know, high school teacher, we skipped over several degrees, like education degrees, moving into kind of leadership positions in the school, then going and getting running the radio station and the radio and TV arts, then going into law. Now we skipped over moving to London.
Yeah.
Before the bed and breakfast, 7-year bed and breakfast, which became one of the top rated bed and breakfasts in Cape Cod.
Eight years.
Well, you wanted it to be 7 and it turned out to be 8.
It turned out to be 8.
Because the real estate market wasn't very good.
Yes. You lived in London for a while. Yes.
And then there's one big one I know you want to share after all of that, which I know Rob's going to love. What did you do in Cape Cod as well?
You're always a product of your upbringing, your genetics and your whatever family
nature
you got
and nurture and all that stuff. Yeah,
all that sort of stuff. So I have to admit that I may have had a character of a father, but I'm telling you, my grandfather on my mother's side was the true influence in my life, because he was a Democratic politician. And he was, and Dan, if you've ever wondered why I really love the racetrack, because when I was about 4 years old, he started taking me to the racetrack where he did his best politicizing. And he was the old politician in the white suit and the Panama hat. And he it really instilled in me the fact that we all had to take care of each other. Because you remember, whether you approve of it or you don't approve of it, in the old days in politics, everybody took care of each other. And so he taught me that at an early age, as well as how to play the ponies. And so I have always been very involved in that area of civic life. My mother, his daughter, became a precinct captain and did all that sort of stuff when she
Grandma Jane was a precinct captain?
Yes, she was.
I had no idea.
And so obviously I was very involved with that. And I have lots of stories about my father, who was a tremendously conservative Republican, God love him. How I really learned to love politics. So I think one thing that I'm so glad that became possible for me because of my family and because of their teaching of these values to me is that I became very interested in Democratic politics and was lucky enough to become part of Barack Obama's staff in 08 and 12.
Wow. And what did you do? What did you do in 08 and 12, in 12?
I was responsible for Massachusetts. I was on the Massachusetts state team and responsible for several congressional districts in Massachusetts and New Hampshire.
Awesome. Well, let's go back because Rob's probably like, wait, ponies. And so actually, while many people might be listening to this podcast, because it's going to be aired before Mother's Day, we'll drop this on Wednesday. Mother's Day will then be Sunday. So if you're listening to this on Sunday, Mom is probably at Arlington Racetrack betting the
Where
ponies.
Else? Where else?
How many years in a row? I mean, how many years? I mean,
how many years have I lived around Arlington? So I don't know. We've gone since you've been a kid.
And so here's the best, Rob, here's the best story. So we're there. I'm not sure if it was on Mother's Day or another day, but we were there. I remember cousin Jeff was there. I can't remember if, I think it was only him. And, you know, Mom is there and she plays a trifecta and she's very scientific, right? Very scientific. One of the horses is named Danny Boy. One of the horses is named after a town in France that you'd visited or lived in when you were in England. And I hate myself for not remembering what the third one was. And so we're sitting there and we're like, you know, classic, anyone who's been to like the horse races, you're sitting there and all of a sudden you're watching and everything's calm and it goes along and they start coming around the back stretch and you're looking at the numbers and you start like jumping up and down and we're like, holy moly, like there they are, boom, 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 boom. And so they come through and they didn't only just come in, they came in order, like boom, she nailed the trifecta. And she's looking up at the board and she's like, Dan, I think I won $7.20. And I'm like, no, Mom, you won like, I can't remember how much it was like 700 or 7,000, like some ridiculous amount of money on a $2 bet.
Right.
Yeah, that's what it was.
I think it was like $2.
$800 on a $2 bet.
And that was it.
This is, again, total you, Mom.
What did I do with that money? Tell me what I did with that money.
That's what we did. So literally that night, we all go home. We all get dressed in fancy clothes and we go to Spiaggio in Chicago, which is one of the nicest restaurants art, and blow the lot on a fancy dinner because my mom has a superstition that she can't keep the money that she wins. She's got to distribute it.
You got to give it you got to give it away. Every cent of it or you're just never going to win again.
Yeah.
That's right.
So the Spiaggio dinner is something that, cousin Jeff and I still talk about. So I think wore his red Ramada Inn jacket, which
I think he did probably.
That's a whole nother story.
Right.
All right.
Absolutely.
So we're coming up on a little bit of time here. So as you kind of reflect back on the conversation and kind of, I think you've shared some of them. I think we have this whole idea of, you know, pigging out on life and everything. But as you kind of look back over the course of your life and what you've been able to do and what you've been able to achieve, and you know, we have a lot of people listening to this podcast. They're, you know, guys like Rob and I. They're like, some of them are developers and computers. You know, some of them are like my side, where they do a lot of sales and marketing and branding. A lot of them are millennials. Who comes after millennials? Gen Zs. Is it Gen Z? Is that right?
Yeah. And then maybe Gen A after that.
Gen A after that. Rob's got, you know, Rob's got McKenna and, you know, kind of his kids. And maybe I shouldn't be using everybody's real name. That's not a real name. Never mind. That was a made up name. What do you think? Like, how do you actualize the art of the possible?
How do you actualize out of the possible? I don't know why this is just personal. I'm not sure it happens if you plan it or think about planning it. This is hard for me to articulate. I think it's more than it just happens. I think that you have to make conscious choices while you're trying to consider the possibilities of life. But I don't think that it can be planned out, because then I think you miss all the neat things in the spaces. And so I think that you have to be alert. I really think you have to be alert. And when you get into that, sometimes when people get into that fog of doing things, doing the same thing all the time in the same way, and we've all heard stories and we've all been stale. And I think that's when we get in trouble. And that is, in my mind, where you have to start thinking about making some sort of movement forward, to the side, even backwards. But the fact is, I think you have to keep yourself moving in life, or you're dead.
So in those, like when you think about the law decision, you think about the bed and breakfast, we think about going to London, was there fear involved? Were you scared?
Oh yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, yes. Because I'm a person who, whether it probably doesn't sound like it, but I am a person that, has to feel safe and secure. And as Rob was talking about, I have to make sure that everything is mortgaged correctly so that no one gets hurt, because you're trying to make some decision for yourself. So there's always those considerations first. And then if you can work them out, then I think it's perfectly fine that you go off and do what you think you need to do for you. I think that always sometimes creates fear, because you're not quite sure that you can pull it off either personally or financially. But there's always a reason to take a chance. And if you think it's a pretty safe chance and you think you can eventually pull out of it, protect yourself, or at least not harm anybody in your family, then I think you need to go and do it.
So it sounds like you manage fear by going back and planning. Looking at all the contingencies and taking care of all the contingencies to say then.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. So when I conceive of the fact that I think I need to go do something, then I go back and prepare the steps so I can get there. Yes, yeah. Absolutely. And I have been fortunate enough to be able to cover my bets, I guess.
Yeah.
Is the best way to say it.
Back to horse racing. Back to horse racing.
Well, sorry. Yes.
Rob, yes. What do you got? What are you thinking, Rob?
The return to horse racing vernacular is, I love it. Cover your bets.
Cover your bets. Big out on life. Cover your bets. That's the theme of the show. So Rob, do you have any other questions? Otherwise, I'm going to let let Kate Singletary here get back to all the other thousands of other things that she clearly has. And we haven't even talked about probably three quarters of the stuff that's going on in your life now, Mom. But thank you so much for taking the time.
I have one question. Can you end a sentence with a preposition?
Well, I know one person on this call that tries to.
I think he can't help himself from doing it.
Tries to. Basically, it is definitely a no-no. I guess in the world of literature, it is acceptable in certain cases. But my English teacher grammar training wants me to vote against it.
All right. So is Mary, what I just want to make sure the source is going to be legit. So we have Grammarly or we have Merriam-Webster.com. It's like, which one of those is, are both of those okay? Or which ones?
Those are both authoritative sources. Yes.
Okay. So let me read this to you in the audience.
Well, hold on. Or your mother.
What?
Yeah, I was going to say, how about me?
We have this entire Mother's Day episode, and you're going to Merriam-Webster's. All right.
You start playing dirty.
You're out of the will.
Yeah. So it's not an error to end a sentence in a preposition, but it is a little less formal. So I know you both know a lot about me. How formal am I?
Insufficiently, apparently.
Very, very insufficiently.
Well said, Rob.
Yes. So, hey, this was, this has been, of course, what I think is our greatest podcast. I really could care less if we bored the hell out of our listeners. I appreciate
Danny.
With this one. I appreciate you, Mom, for coming on. I'm glad I could do this with Rob, who is a very special friend of mine, and do this with you. So thank you, Rob. Thank you, Mom, for coming on. And thank you for teaching me the art of the possible.
Absolutely. And happy Mother's Day to
thank you.
All the mothers out there.
And thank you. Thank you very much. I appreciate you having me on. It was great fun.
All right. Thank you, Mom. Happy Mother's Day. And then Rob, we have a few people we're cooking. I don't think we want to announce them yet, but we have a few people coming up. There's probably a few topics that you and I want to talk about. Anything you want to say before we end the show?
No, I'm delighted. And thanks for coming on, Kate. It was a deep pleasure. And I will probably have to eat this podcast, but I thoroughly enjoy being your son's friend and colleague.
Oh, no. Good.
I'm sorry. It broke up there at the end there. Could you repeat that last part again? All right. Hey, everybody. Thanks so much for listening. Find us on Twitter, LinkedIn, and Facebook. And thanks for listening to Art of the Possible. We'll talk to you in a week.